everybody. Well, Alan and Mike, you're out of town, so I will do the honors today of delivering today's message. But prior to the message, let me just share one thing with you. Immediately after our service, we will participate in probably the most sacred of all rituals for the church, adding one to the body. We'll conduct a baptism. So I want to encourage you to bear witness to the event. Bear witness to one being added to Christ's body. So I want to encourage you to stay for that if at all possible. Now, if you got to check out your hotel, I understand, and I'm sure he understands too. All right, the question today in our sermon, in our lesson today, the question today is a very difficult one. It may well be the hardest question in all of life. The hardest question in all of life, and that is, why do bad things happen to good people? Why do bad things happen to Christians? Why do bad things happen to people who have done no wrong, yet they suffer? Why do good people suffer? This morning we want to examine suffering and how the Christian is to handle it. How's the Christian to understand it and handle it and bear suffering? Our anchor text will come to us from Isaiah 55:8-9. And it reads, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than earth, so are my ways higher than your ways and my thoughts than your thoughts." What God is saying here is that mine is infinite wisdom, yours is finite. There's no end to my wisdom, there's no end to my eyesight. Yours has limitations. And my thoughts are not your thoughts. Your thoughts are not my thoughts. We're on a separate plateau here. The objective of our lesson is to increase our faith in God during troubled times, to share a word that will ignite our faith, to trust God more fully. Those are the objectives of today's lesson. One, to increase our faith in God during troubled times, to share a word that will ignite our faith, to trust God more fully when we just don't understand. When we just don't understand. When misfortune befalls us and we say, I've done all that I was told to do. I've done all that I was required to do, yet I suffer. And we usually ask the question, why, God? Why? We live in a world full of suffering and pain and sorrow. When tragedy comes, the painful cry is often the same one, why? As a Christian, how are we to handle things like terrorist attacks, like floods, and hurricanes, fires and that destroy life and property? Many of you have been here for many years, and you know that my wife and I lost everything in Hurricane Ike. We left Galveston in my truck. I had my truck, my wife, my dog, and my laptop. Yet we've returned to Galveston from Austin, and God has restored us double. Has restored us double, and we've learned much through suffering. See, when you've lost everything, and I mean not another pair of shoes, when you've lost everything and you're restored, you start to say to yourself, why am I so blessed? Why am I so blessed? Life is definitely not fair. Sometimes it's downright cruel to many. Seems like every time you turn around, there's horrible news in the paper or on the television about some horrific act, some horrific crime happening somewhere in the world. And believe me, with a career in the United States Marine Corps in Vietnam, I have seen death and I have seen terror. With a 20-year career as a Los Angeles police officer, I have seen death, I have seen cruelty. I have seen man's inhumanity to man you would never understand. But yet I still believe that God is in control. I still believe that God has a hand. that God has a message for all of us at all times. When trials come, usually one of the two things happen. Either one turns to God or one runs away from God. Proverbs 3:5 reads, "Tell us trust in the Lord with all our heart and lean not to our own understanding." Trust in the Lord with all our heart and lean not to our own understanding. Move beyond our own finite understanding. Trust in the Lord. Job 14:1 reads, "Man born of woman is a few days and full of trouble." We will always have trouble. We will always see days of trouble. We will always see days of happiness, days of glory. That's how life deals with us. How we respond is more important than what happens to us. Job himself, let's take a look at Job, was a blameless and upright man, a man who feared God. He'd been greatly blessed by God. Suddenly, through an incredible series of events, Job lost everything: his wealth, his children, and his respect. His painful cry was, "Why, God? Why?" Job 3:11-19 reads, "Why was I born, God, if this is my end? Why didn't God take my life when everything else was taken from me?" Job 3:20. "Why has God turned away from me?" Job 9:13. Our question today, again, is, why do bad things happen to good people? Why must people suffer? Why must there be a heartache and disappointment in the world? Why must there be disease, pain, and death in the world? Why does tragedy invade the lives of those who sincerely try to serve God? See, there is no immunity from tragedy in our service to God. Many answers have been given in an attempt to explain the problems of human suffering, and most of those answers are all wrong. There are many faulty and incomplete explanations for the presence of suffering. Book of Job illustrates this very plainly. Job's wife, his friends, and his acquaintances struggled with the question of why Job was suffering. They had reasonable sounding pat answers, but they were all wrong. Let's look at some of the answers they gave on account of Job's suffering and see if there's a message here for any of us present. One of the answers was, "God sent it as a message to you, Job." That was the answer his wife gave. She felt that God was causing Job's agony, so she urged him to curse God and die. Job 2:9. People often accept the same explanation for suffering today. "God took my loved one." "It's God's will for some tragedy to occur," are often the explanations given when tragedy happens. Natural calamities are called acts of God. In this, we neglect the fact that God has established a certain natural law, orders of law, that he will not change. They serve to protect us all. The example I always use is the law of gravity. If God suspends the law of gravity, it doesn't matter what type of person you are, how good a person you are, if you're standing up on a 45th floor and you jump out the window, you are going to splatter. But I've been a good person. There's a law of gravity God will not suspend because you've been a good person. Because if God suspends the law of gravity, everything in here flies up, including you, up to the ceiling. So there are some natural laws that will not be suspended. It is absolutely false to say that all suffering is sent by God. Absolutely false. Job's sorrow was not inflicted by God, but by whom? Satan. Satan was the one who inflicted the suffering on God's servant Job. It is emphatically not true that God is responsible for suffering. God is not responsible for suffering. This was the response of Job's three friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. God was punishing you. Job, you must have done something wrong. Otherwise, God would not have turned his back on you. You must have done something wrong. These are his friends trying to cheer him up. You must have done something wrong. You just don't remember the dirt you did. They were not bad men. They meant well, but they were tragically mistaken. They argue that all suffering is the direct and sure result of sin. Whoever perished the innocent, they asked. Whoever punished the innocent in Job 4 and 7. They advised Job to admit that he sinned and that he deserved what was happening to him. Go ahead, Job, just admit that you sinned. Admit you've done wrong and you deserve all this that's happening to you, was the advice from his friends. Sometimes people really do suffer for their sins. Well, we make a grave mistake when we assume that all suffering is a result of sin, when in fact it is not all suffering is a result of sin. Sin does, in many instances, bring about suffering, but not always. When Jesus died on the cross, two men died with him, suffering for their sins. But Jesus did no sin. Neither was there guile found in his mouth. He suffered in innocence. Many people do the same thing today. Many people suffer in innocence, and yet they suffer. In John 9, 1 through 3, Jesus healed a man born blind, and when he asked whose sin was it responsible for the man's blindness, Jesus responded with, "Neither this man sinned nor his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him." Many times we have different afflictions that befall us so that we can become instruments of study for others. Innocent people often suffer without having deserved it. If we believe it's tit for tat, and anytime something bad happens, it's because you did something bad, or anytime something good happens, it's because you did something good, you're mistaken and you're living in an infantile world. There's an adult reality that suffering will come to those who do no sin. Suffering will come to all of us at some point, at some time. The explanation given by a young man named Elihu for Job's trouble was, God is trying to tell you something. Ever heard anybody say, reason you're giving all your problems, God's trying to tell you something. He was impatient with Job and his three friends because they couldn't see what their thought was. Obvious, God is trying to teach you a lesson, he said. Job 33:19, he said, man is chastened or disciplined with pain. This is sometimes true, but is not always the case. It is not always the case that God is trying to tell you something. God taught Paul humility by refusing to take away the thorn in his flesh. 2 Corinthians 12:7-9. The thorn in his flesh that we still don't know exactly what it was, but God would not take it away. Yet Paul was a devoted servant. But it was not the total answer. It did not apply in the case of Job, did not apply in the case of Paul, and does not apply in the case of you and me today. How can we react to suffering in our lives? See, I think the key here, since we know that we will all suffer, how we react to suffering becomes the antidote to suffering. How we respond to misfortune becomes our fortune. How we respond to times of terror, fear, uncertainty becomes a plateau for us to fall to our knees. Our lesson this morning was on prayer. Many times we stand so proud that we need to be knocked down. Many times we stand so proud that we think we have all the answers and we want God to just come along and co-sign for us. And sometimes that makes us a prime candidate for suffering. How can we react to suffering in our lives? We can remember that the important thing is not why suffering comes, but how we meet it. Because as long as you live and you breathe, you will suffer. Never in that illusion or that bubble to think that I'm a good Christian, so I'll never suffer. You will suffer, but how do you respond to it? How do we act for it? Suffering can make us bitter or it can make us better. Suffering can make us bitter or it can make us better. It becomes a choice of how you respond. It will do one of two things, and it's all up to us. The real question is not what's behind my suffering, but what's in me to respond to my suffering. What's in me to move forward? What's in me to see in this suffering? What am I to use this to grow from? How do I grow from this suffering? We can use suffering as a tool for improving our lives or as an excuse for getting mad at God. We always have free will. God will not take that away from us. We can either use this tool, suffering, for as a tool for improving ourselves, or we can wallow in our own squalor and blame God for not blessing us the way we think he should bless us. We spoke earlier today, and I just want to share this with those of you that weren't at the Bible study. Let's make sure we understand one thing, our role in terms of our relationship with God. God is not our butler to go get me this, bring me this, bless me with this. God is not our butler. We need to understand our role. We are subjects to the King. We are subjects to God and subject to his will. Many times our role, sometimes our head starts to swell so big that we think we have the answer and we can command God. A fool's errand. Illustration here, a missionary and his wife in Pakistan had a six-month-old baby who became ill with a mysterious fever and died in one day. Wise man told them, a tragedy like this is like being plugged into a boiling water. If you're an egg, your affliction will make you hard-boiled and unresponsive. If you're a potato, you will emerge soft and flexible and usable. Think of the terms. If you fall into a boiling pot of water, do you want to be an egg, hard-boiled, or a potato, usable? It becomes up to us. When suffering comes, we can learn to pray, oh Lord, let me be like the potato. Let me come out of this boiling water, soft, usable, not hard boiled like the egg. We can remember that suffering does not defeat or frustrate the purposes of God. God has a purpose for your life, and suffering has no role in it in altering the purpose God has for your life. You may have a purpose, but God has a divine purpose for your life. Your purpose may conflict with God's purpose. And in those times, oftentimes, we lead ourselves into our own suffering. Romans 8:28 says, and we know that God causes all things to work together for the good, those who love God and to those who are called according to his purpose. Tragedy, disaster, sorrow, calamity do not frustrate God's purposes. God's purposes will endure. God's purposes will come to fruition. God did not send Paul's thorn, did not send Paul's thorn in the flesh. Satan did, remember. But God used it for Paul's good. Paul was a better man because of that thorn in the flesh. Sometimes when we suffer, we need to move beyond the actual suffering event and move beyond that to see a greater purpose we can serve as a result of the suffering. No matter what happens, God can arrange matters so that it fits into his pattern, his plan. One poet once said, my life is a quilt being stitched by God. We can remember to trust God and rely on him when whatever comes. We do not understand all that happens. We do not have all the facts. Our vision, remember, is limited. We're limited by time and space. We can only see so far. God is unlimited with his infinite vision. God didn't tell Job why he suffered. We see from an earthly vantage point instead of from an eternity. We must trust in the wisdom, power, and love of God in times of stress, in times of suffering. This is the message from the book of Job. Trust in God when calamities come. Trust in God when suffering comes. Because God sees the end, you and I don't. Since God knows the end from the beginning, Isaiah 46:10, we can trust him in all things, even those we cannot understand. As a matter of fact, I would submit to you to trust in God, not even though we don't understand, when we don't understand. When we don't understand is the time to say, Lord, I just don't know, but I'm going to leave it in your hands and trust your judgment. Trust where you lead me. Jesus says something in a different connection, which also applies to this. In John 13:7, Jesus replied, you do not realize now what I'm doing, but later you will understand. The same thing applies with God. Many times we don't realize now what we're going through, why we're going through something. But scripture says, in time you will understand. If you're open and receptive and not that hard-boiled egg. Because if you're that hard-boiled egg, nothing comes through. Bad things happen to both good and bad people. Matthew 5:45, Jesus says, he causes his sun to rise and shine on the evil and the good and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. So none of us are immune. But I'm a good Christian, so I shouldn't have to suffer. There are bad people out there. They should suffer. We all suffer. It's how we respond to the suffering that makes the difference, not the fact that we suffer or not suffer, or calamities befall us or not befall us. While the world may be asking, where is God? In times of tragedy, they're also asking, where are his followers when I need them? I can honestly say that for us, well, the church was destroyed at that time, and for us in the church here during Ike, after Ike, and at my house, I saw some of God's handiwork. They came in the form of Oklahoma Christian students. Students from Oklahoma Christian, students from Harding, students from colleges came to clear out the mold, to clear out our houses from the mold. I saw God's handiwork there. In times of need, people of God responded. Responded positively for us to rebuild. People of God responded. So when we look at tragedy, I think the most important thing is to also look at the response. In our life application, and then we'll shut it down here, the truth is God has already given us an answer to the pain and suffering around us. From the head, it's from the head, the heart, and the hands. That concept. From the head, here's what we need to know. In the head, we know about this truth. You are God's answer for hurting people because you are God's messenger of hope. You are the messenger to help people who are suffering. You are here for God's people who are going through suffering on an emotional, spiritual, or physical level. You are the ones our God has assigned that responsibility. You are here for the person who needs a real human being to come alongside, paraclete, to walk alongside and be Jesus in the flesh in their lives. You, as followers of Christ, are the antidote to many of the poisons that befalls many of the human spirits. You. From our heart, here's what we need to feel about this truth. Suffering has the potential of weakening or strengthening our walk with Christ. It all depends on our own perspective. We get to choose whether it will strengthen us or weaken us. And from our hands, this is what we need to do about this truth. This week, pray for opportunities to help someone hurting. Pray for opportunities and be God's answer to those who are in need. Pray for an opportunity to be a help to someone in need. Use this opportunity to help people find the comfort that is only available through Jesus. When you do that and focus on that, your own suffering begins to dissipate proportionately to how much you put out there of yourself to helping other people. The truth of the matter is, there are people all around us going through their own trials. It's not just you and me. This is a hurting world full of hurting people in need of hope. And you can be that hope. Isaiah 26 and 4 says, trust in the Lord forever, for the Lord is the rock eternal. That is, at all times in any situation, in times of pain, temptation, and darkness, trust in the Lord. As we conclude here, in all circumstances, we can rest assured that we are His. He loves us more than we can imagine. We belong to Him and He makes plans for us. Often unknown to us, He's never going to let us go. When we suffer, let us do as Job did and refuse to turn away or blame God. Remember Job worshiped in reaction to the tragedy in his life. His response was to worship. Thankfully, Job teaches us the wisdom in turning to God instead of away from Him in times of great heartache. As long as we live, there will be suffering. But we believe that there is a better land, a land where suffering and sorrow are unknown. God has prepared a home for us there. We sing a song, and I hope we all believe that song. This world is not my home. I'm just a passing through. And we're all headed there. He wishes us to come there. Were it not for the heartaches and disappointments and suffering of this world, we might forget the greater destiny that lies ahead, where there's no more pain, no more sorrow. Our invitation to the question of why do bad things happen to good people? Perhaps the suffering of this world were designed in part to cause not to be satisfied here, but to lift our eyes toward the world to come, where He will wipe away every tear. There will be no more death, no more mourning, no more crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away, Revelations 21 and 4. Those who have this hope need never fear tomorrow. If this hope is yours, then God bless you. If not, it can be. All that's necessary is that you come forward to request the prayers of the church or repent of your sins. Confess Jesus Christ as the Lord.
We'll sing number 129. 129.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but my feet.